Okay, are we ready?
All set in the booth?
Okay.
Yes, I am a little nasal again. And I will talk about that when we officially start the podcast. Hey, it's the winter, right? You got to catch a little bug sometime. It's a little nasal, but I know how to work my instrument. So I will not talk through my nose as much as I can. And hopefully I will make it through. Although you may hear some, which is always very professional. Okay, well, you can try to, we'll edit that, right? In post, as they say. All right, cool. Write it down. I am getting clogged here. Wow. Episode 141, if I make it through, okay? Three S's, especially today. Star, smile, and come on, Jim, strong. Let's do it, all right? Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. Whether you click, scroll, download, whatever it is. Double click. I don't know what you do. Whatever it is you do to find us on a weekly basis. Thank you very much. As I said, all I ask for is 1 hour a week out of the 168 that you are allotted thanks to the rotation and the revolution of the Earth around the sun. Think about it. That's really... That's really why we have all those weird little conventions in our lives. It's all based around that sun and that revolution and all that orbiting. Yes, as you can hear, I assume, I am clogged. I wasn't about 10 minutes ago, but I am now. You hear that? Oh, man. Holy smokes. I need one of those. I know they've got these neti pot things, but those sound pretty scary. I've seen some new things on television. As you know, if you listen with any regularity, you know that I love a lot of the as seen on TV things. And there's a new one, a couple of new ones that help with congestion. When I get sick, I usually just get congested. I don't. Sometimes I've lost my voice, but when I get sick, it's mostly congestion. I don't know if that's just the way my body is, but there's this thing that I've seen that it's kind of like a steam. It's shaped like an oxygen mask, but it blows steam into your nostrils, and supposedly is supposed to give you at least some temporary relief from congestion. Now, I know that this neti pot thing is something that I never heard of until about maybe 8 years ago on the radio, during a radio show. Someone was talking about a neti pot. I had never heard about it. WGN's Steve Bertrand actually brought it up. And I never had heard about it before. Never used one. Never knew it existed. It's a kind of a interesting device that you apparently, from what I understand, you inject fluid through one nostril and it comes out the other. I don't know. But these new things. There's another one called Naraga or something. It seems like it's a very big contraption. It's the same kind of thing, the same concept that it clears up your congestion with steam. And they even mentioned the neti pot. Yeah, you know, it's a alternative to that. It's an improvement over that. So I don't know. They're kind of expensive, but I think I may need to get one because usually when I get a cold, it's congestion. It's not so much a fever. It's not so much nausea and gastrointestinal problems, as they say. But it's mostly sinus. It's mostly congestion, which, of course, gives me the nasal voice. But I will fight through it. And as I said, hopefully it's not too bad. And I try to take care of my instrument, if you will. And I also know some tricks, hopefully, to project without using my nose as much. There's some letters and some that you can't help but use your nose through. So every so often you may hear a little congestion. But it's funny because the congestion plays in, not the conjection or the convection oven. The congestion actually plays into one of the things I wanted to talk about today. And just so you know, in addition to some of the things I want to talk about later in the show, we will have Emily Armerlandi on for the Pop Culture Club to talk about the recently released Oscar nominations. We haven't had Emily on for a few weeks over the holidays and things like that. She's been busy, and she actually has been under the weather for most of this winter, I think. So we'll find out how she's doing health-wise. And no, I didn't catch anything from her because she's hundreds of miles away. But we'll be talking to her later in the podcast about the Oscars and other things, too. It'd be nice to talk to Emily again. So, yeah, pardon the pardon the congestion. But it does play into what I want to talk about today. Over the last 4 or 5 years, my wife and I, we've been to the Napa Valley in California, the wine country, several times over the last couple of decades. But over the last 4 or 5 years, we've actually gone just for 2 or 3 days, just a quick little getaway in January or February or, you know, early March, just to break up, mostly February, just to break up the Chicago winter for a couple of days. And you go out there and the sun is out. It's usually 60 degrees, if not warmer. Sometimes it's 70. And it's usually sunny, and it's just a nice little break from the Chicago winters. And I love it out there. I love the surroundings and all the vineyards. And as I said, wine has always been my beverage or my alcoholic drink of choice. I know it's cool now to be a winey or whatever they call them, but I've been into wine for over 20 years, and it's always been my drink. And really, I got into it because of a trip probably 20 years ago to Napa. And then after that came home, and I joined like a Wine of the Month club, and just to learn. And they weren't high-priced wines at all. Some of them were, you know, this was 20 years ago. They were $7 or $8, $9 bottles of wine. It wasn't that they were, you know, some, you know, hotsy-totsy-ritsy kind of wine club. It was just a nice kind of thing to get a nice kind of baseline education as to the different kinds of wines out there and whites and reds and, you know, the different flavors and things like that, to the point that I was able to figure out which wines I preferred over other ones. So we usually go to Napa, and once again we did this year, a couple of weeks ago. And of course, it's funny how things work out, isn't it? It just so happened that the few couple of days that we were going out there, which is in Northern California, not far from San Francisco, about an hour and a half, maybe hour and 15 minutes out of San Francisco. and or Oakland, which is right across the bay from San Francisco. A certain eyeglass-wearing piano player was also playing in Oakland during the time we were away. As I said, it's funny how that works out sometimes. Or maybe it was vice versa. But so, yeah, we were in Napa for a couple of days, and then we drove over down back to Oakland to see Elton perform. That was show number 188. As we go head straight into hopefully 200 by the time he finishes his tour in 2021. So I got 2 years to see 12 more shows at least. So I think I might do it. The funny thing is, I usually average about 6 shows a year. So actually it's 3 years. If you think about it, we still got 2019 here. 2020, and then so I certainly, if all goes well, I should be able to hit the 200 mark before he finishes this major tour. But anyway, so we had a nice time. Now it was funny because usually, as I said, we go in February and the weather is nicer. Now it's always a crapshoot, you know. You plan a trip. Of course, when we went there, it was raining. And it had been raining. And so it was cloudy. It was still, the temperature was nice. It was still 60, so it was very relaxing to go from, you know, the 20s and ultimately the low teens when we came home to leave Chicago in the midst of that to go to, you know, 60 degrees, even if it's cloudy and a little drizzly. It still beats 20 degrees or 10 degrees. And of course, you know, 3 or 4 days after we were leaving, we left on a Saturday, and on Monday through the rest of the week was going to be sunny and 65 or 70. So, you know, it's a crapshoot. But I still love going there. We have a lot of favorite restaurants and places to go. And so it really didn't stop us from doing anything. But, you know, it would have been nice if the sun was out a little more. But so we made the nice little trip to Napa, and then we went to Oakland to see Elton. And so then we are on our way home. And so on our way home, we are hearing the night before how snow is about to hit Chicago. Now, Chicago's had a very, up to this point, aside from a big kind of blast of a semi blizzard in right around Thanksgiving time in November, Chicago has had a relatively mild winter up to that point in terms of snowfall and temperature. But of course, while we are on our way home, the winter gods, the winter warlock, I will give you some snow. Or there's the heat miser and the frost miser. Was that from the Christmas story, the Christmas special, A Year Without Santa Claus? But so yeah, on Friday night going into Saturday, snow hit Chicago, and so of course we're coming home on Saturday morning. Supposed to leave San Francisco at 9:30 in the morning and land in Chicago at 4. And so we get to the airport, you know, around 6:45 or 7 or so, just to be safe. So it was a long day. We got up very early. We had to drive. So it was a long day. You know, we got up at about 4:30, 5 o'clock. Get to the airport. Everything's going smoothly. Our flight is on time, and we're all happy. And then it started. Oh, jeez. And did it ever. We got a text at about 8 o'clock that said our flight had been delayed from 9:30 to 10:30. Okay, so now we had another hour to wait around. And about 10 to 9, we got another text that said our flight was now delayed till 11. And then at about 5 to 10, we got another text that said our flight was delayed until noon. And then at about 10 after 11, we got another text that said our flight was now delayed till 1:30. So we go up to the desk at about 12:45 saying, you know, do we go to the gate? Oh, well, wait a minute. Well, no, now you might be taking off at 2:40. Now, granted, remember this, we got to the airport at 7. And pretty much we were sitting down. We got through security pretty quick. So we were sitting down at, you know, ready to go by 7:30, 7:45, because we figured we would be, you know, boarding at 9 for a 9:30 flight. So we've been there. We've been in ready-to-leave mode for quite a while, and now we've been sitting around for almost five hours. So then they said, well, that's going to be 2:40. Then all of a sudden they said, no, it is going to take off at 1:30. Oh, okay. So we go to the gate, and we get on the plane, and we sit on the plane. We're ready to go, and I said, well, you know, it wasn't too bad, and we won't get home that late, and we are hearing that there is snow in Chicago, and I'm already dreading having to shovel when I get home. I hate shoveling snow, and of course, I wasn't there on Friday when the snow started, so it's already, you know, accumulated. It's already sitting there, and they were telling us how cold it's going to be, so now I'm picturing, you know, I don't know how much snow we get because it was very different depending on where you lived. And then I'm like, oh, my gosh, if it gets to be very cold, the snow, you know, it's going to be packed down. It's going to be icy, whatever. So I'm already thinking about that. But I really want to get home regardless. So we get on the plane. We are in the plane. And I say to my wife, well, yes, that was a pain in the butt, but at least we're on the plane and we're going home because there was a flight after ours that was canceled completely. And as we're sitting here, and many flights to Chicago and many flights going other places were canceled because of the weather in Chicago, and it is a major, you know, connection hub for the major airlines. So it was the whole on Saturday, this Saturday, it was very chaotic throughout the airport, unless people in the West Coast were flying, you know, to the West Coast or even to the middle of the country. But if you were going to Chicago or farther east, you were in trouble. So we get on the plane. And I said, well, at least we didn't get canceled. It, you know, it would be a little later than we planned, but, you know, at least we're going to get home today. We won't have to potentially sleep in the airport, which we have done once, and that wasn't fun. We did that in Dallas about 10 years ago. Literally slept overnight, slept on a cot, one of those cots. We have done that. So we're on the plane. And the pilot says, thank you for hanging on, sticking with us here. You know, major delay at this point. We were supposed to take off at 9:30. It is now 1:30. So that's 4 hours. And he says, and just so you know, we probably won't really, we're going to pull off from the gate right now. But we probably will not take off until about 2:40. And we're like, okay, so we're going to basically pull off and then sit on the side somewhere on the plane for another hour and a half. After about 15 minutes, he comes back on the plane on the loudspeaker and says, I just got a call. We're going to be delayed for at least 3 more hours. What? So we're going back to the gate, and you're going to get off the plane because we can't even keep you on the plane that long. So now everybody has to get up, you know, and now these days everybody has the overhead, you know, carry-ons because nobody wants to pay the extra baggage fee, which I, you know, what a scam is that? I mean, I fly a lot. I don't know if you fly a lot. I fly quite a bit. But regardless, whether you do or not, this whole idea now of how the airlines have somehow been able to push this baggage fee. There is, you know, I don't know if you remember, folks, but there was a time, and it wasn't that long ago, for the beginning of air travel, commercial air travel, that you did not pay for your bags. That makes absolutely no sense to pay for your bags. They want you to travel, right? The airlines and the hotels and the rent-a-car places, they all want you to travel. And then they charge you for your most basic item when you travel, your luggage. What kind of scam is that? And if you remember, that charge, beginning to charge people for the luggage, began after 9/11. I'll tell you, when you look at 9/11 and the impacts that it has had on our society and daily living, I know he's dead, but Osama bin Laden, at the end of the day, had some major influence, and he really he succeeded in what he wanted to do, which was disrupt. He disrupted. He got killed for it, but I don't think he cared. But in terms of our economy, the security, the prices to travel, the security everywhere, the threat of terrorism that still looms over us and takes up a lot of our budgetary allocations, just the complete unrest and the entire instability in the Middle Eastern region. Ever since 2001, September 11th, our lives have changed, and they have not gone back. So, Osama bin Laden, sadly, whatever his deranged goals were, as I said, he got killed. I understand that. But he did succeed in what he wanted to do, and that was disrupt. And he has disrupted. And one of the things that happened was that the airline industry was decimated, obviously. I mean, people's confidence in getting on a plane for a while was certainly shaken after, you know, planes flew into high-rise buildings, and planes were suddenly possibly used as weapons. And so the American, as well as the whole worldwide airline industry, was almost, you talk about disruption, was almost brought to its feet and was close to bankruptcy, if you remember, because people were afraid to fly. And flights were canceled. Despite, I mean, don't forget, for almost a week, there were no planes flying in this country. And because the airline industry was run on such tight margins, as soon as there was a little chink in the armor, the whole industry almost collapsed. And so prices went up, and they were looking for other ways to bring in revenue, because we couldn't go on. This country is based on our transportation system, and these are some of the biggest companies we have in terms of revenue generation and employment. So we could not let the airline industry go out of business. And so, as a country, as consumers, as a government, we allowed the airline industry to consolidate and to take extreme measures. And one of those measures, if you recall, early on, was charging for bags. And, you know, once again, I don't like to be, you know, a naysayer here, but, you know, I have to think that somewhere in the world of airlines, they've always wanted to charge for bags. But they figured we can't. There's no way. People would revolt. There would be a revolution. The people wouldn't, they wouldn't stand for it because it goes against, as I said, every piece of logic. You want me to travel, but you want to charge me to take my bag? What am I supposed to do? You're going to charge me at that time $25. Now the bags are $40. If you have an extra bag, especially, or even one bag. So, but that just kind of slid in, and consumers and Americans, we didn't really balk at it because we were like, well, the airlines need the money. Well, now that is like free money for them. And to have raised that is outrageous. And they have contributed to the problems of boarding and all the other delays that go with it because everybody, you know, is carrying on their bags, so they don't want to pay the extra fee. And so we're getting people with taking on more bags, so the carry-on compartments are filled now. They never even used to be filled. If you remember, 10, 15 years ago, those compartments were never even filled. You were throwing anything up there because no one was checking. Everybody was checking their bags. The line to check your bags used to be around the corner. Now those people at the gates don't do anything. Boy, that one really bugs the heck out of me. It's like if you go to a restaurant, you know, the way that I would equate it with, you know, an airline charging you for your bag is as if you went to a restaurant and you ordered your meal, and then the waiter came by and said, okay, it'll cost you $10 for a knife, $15 for a fork. I know you got soup, another $5 for, did you want a soup spoon? It's $5 for a regular spoon, $7 for a soup spoon. Oh, did you want a butter knife? If you want a butter knife, that's a special knife. That'll be 10. I mean, that's like charging for the plate that the food comes on and your utensils. So you can order your food, but the plate and the utensils to eat it on and eat it with will be an extra charge. That's exactly what it's like to charge people for their luggage on an airline trip. How do they get away with that? I don't understand that. I understand initially, but that's something that should have been allowed for a year. If they had to make up some lost revenue, I'll give you that. But now that is a pure revenue generator. There's not an expense tied to that. And you could say, well, there's the guys that load them on. Yeah, but those guys are there anyway. Those people, they're loading it on anyway. They're getting paid anyway, whether there's 15 bags or 3 bags. They're there to unload and load the luggage. That's their job. Whether they load 100 or whether they load 50 or they load 10, it doesn't matter. But if they load 100 and you're making $40 on every bag as opposed to zero on every flight, not bad. Free money. So, anyway, we get off the plane. We get on the plane. We are seated. We are buckled. We push away from the gate. And 10 minutes later, and you could hear the pilot's voice.
I almost, I hate to tell you this, folks, but we're going to have to take you back to the gate.
Wow. Well, at this point, I mean, we have all, you know, we don't even know, you know, we just want to get home at this point. You didn't even hear, I mean, you certainly heard a lot of people grumbling. There's no question. But I thought it would actually be worse than it was. But after 4 hours, you're almost beaten. So now we get off the plane, and now we wait. And as soon as we get off the plane, we're getting texts again that says your flight is delayed. Well, yeah, I know that. So they finally tell us that the plane's going to take off at 4 o'clock. Now, don't forget, this was about 2 o'clock, so we got to wait at least 2 hours just to get back on the plane again, which we did. And we wound up taking off at 5 p.m. We're supposed to take off at 9:30. So you do the math. Okay? That's 2.5 plus 5. I don't know how many ways you can do it. That's 7.5 hours of just from when we were supposed to leave. And don't forget, my wife and I, we were at the airport at like 6:30. So, you know, we're getting close to 12 hours that we were there. So now, of course, all I've been thinking about is that snow. I'm happy to go home, but I'm also saying it's supposed to keep snowing. And I don't know how much snow has fallen at my house. So I'm actually excited to get home finally. I'm going to get home now at 10 o'clock as opposed to 4 o'clock. It would have been much easier to shovel the snow at 5 o'clock or 5:30 when I have gotten home as opposed to perhaps 11 or 11:30 at night. So I'm hoping that maybe we didn't get a lot of snow. As I said, it varied in what areas you were in. So the plane, you know, I don't know, he must have hit a nice tailwind or just, you know, doubled the speed. We got home from Los Angeles or from San Francisco in 3 hours, which is pretty quick. It's usually at least a 3.5 hour, if not 4 hour flight sometime. Sometimes 4 hours and 15 minutes. We got back home in 3 hours. But still, by the time we got, you know, we got off the plane, got the car, cleaned the car off, which was filled with snow, and it's been sitting there for 2 or 3 days. Get home, you know, at 11 o'clock, and sure enough, you know, there's the snow. It wasn't crazy high, and it wasn't, thankfully, wet snow. It was light. And so, the trooper that I am, as much as I hate shoveling snow, and I've been doing it now for more than 40 years, because my dad had a heart attack when I was like 10 years old, and he didn't shovel snow pretty much after that. So I was like 10 years old, and I was shoveling snow. So I've been shoveling snow for a while, gang. And I'm no more than anyone else, you know. You keep shoveling it. No pun intended. Well, I've been shoveling for a while, but I'm talking about snow. And so, at 11:30, there I am. And I have to say, Elton Jamie, God bless her, because she saw how I was dreading having to shovel the snow. And thankfully, it wasn't too high and it wasn't too heavy. And so she said, she got dressed and she said, I'm going to help you. And so she certainly did her share, which was great. And it certainly made it a lot quicker. But I had to go out the next day at 8 in the morning. And we didn't even do the driveway. We just did the front. Because it was, you know, we were up from 4 in the morning. And we're sitting around, we're on a plane, and now it's 11:30. So by the time we finished the front, it was about 12:30 at night, in the morning, after midnight. So I said, well, I'll do the driveway tomorrow. We have a long driveway, unfortunately, which takes a while. So I got up the next day, still tired. But as much as I hate shoveling snow, I also feel like you got to do it. It's part of your homeowner's responsibility. So I got up, and then plus, you know, if it snows anymore or it freezes, we can't get our car in the garage. We were barely able to drive in down the driveway as it was because of some of the drifts with just the blowing of the snow. We didn't get a lot of snow, but depending on the wind, you know. So I got up I got out there at 8 o'clock, 10 after 8, and I have a pretty big garage and driveway, and I did not I was not going to kill myself out there trying to break any records. I went very slow, just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And that took me 2 hours and 15 minutes. And as I started to talk about my congestion, the only time that I get a cold is after I shovel. I don't know why, but I know it's all about, you know, germs and viruses. I bundle up. I have a couple pairs of socks on. Gloves, coat, scarf around, hat on. I am bundled up, and I still, every time I shovel, I get a cold. Now, there is something zen about shoveling, if you ever have done it or continue to do it. There is something kind of peaceful about it. I mean, I did this from 8 o'clock till about, as I said, about quarter after 10 on a Saturday morning. So it was very quiet. And, you know, everybody was sleeping, and I was just doing my very, you know, my rows, you know, wax on, wax off, just row by row, back and forth, not using the snow blower, using a shovel, because I didn't want to wake anybody up at 8 o'clock, but I wanted to get this done in case it snowed again, in case it got cold. So I was, you know, considerate of my neighbors. I'm not going to wake them up on a Saturday morning. So I was shoveling the snow. It wasn't too high, but you still had to shovel it. And so, you know, you start to just talk to yourself or think about things and make this time pass because it's such a boring, as I said, it wasn't heavy. So it wasn't so much of a strenuous thing as it was just monotonous to clear this out. And you start thinking about things. And so I'm sitting there going, okay, well, what am I going to do later today and tomorrow and stuff like that? And then suddenly I slipped on some ice, you know, that was buried underneath all this snow. And I flew in the air. I mean, I really lost my balance because I wasn't walking fast, but, you know, you take one slip. And once that leg, gets out from you, and I went, I literally left the ground. And so I felt as I was feeling like I was going to go backward. So thanks to playing football and being a fullback for a few years in high school, I know how to fall. I know how to kind of move my body to lessen the impact of a hit or a fall. And so while I'm in the air, I was able to change direction. And instead of fall backwards, I was able to fall on my side. Like I was just, you know, going over the goal line, you know, third and one. And they called my number to score a touchdown and just going through the two hole. And so down I went, you know, shovel goes up in the air, and down I go, sort of on my side, on my shoulder, and as I lay there, I take a second and I see that I'm not in pain. And so nothing was sprained or broken or pulled or twisted. And but it really sends a quick reminder of how things can change in a second, because I easily could have had, who knows, if I fall in the wrong way, I could have hit my knee, I could have hit my head, I could have broke my arm. And 1 second I'm thinking about what I'm going to do later in the day after I'm done shoveling, and the rest of my day and the next 2 months could have been completely different with a broken arm. Or a broken leg, or a twisted this, or a strained that. And that was, so then after that, thankfully I was almost done when it happened. And I even went slower and was more cautious and threw a lot more salt down. And, you know, once again, you know, okay, you know, these things happen. Learn from your mistakes so they don't happen again. But it really did send the message like, wow. You know, You just always have to be so diligent whenever you do something, because it just reminded me again of how silly it is sometimes when we make plans. Isn't it crazy? I mean, this whole 3 or 4 days was filled with that. We made plans to go to Napa, right, expecting it to be sunny and mild and everything, and it rained and it was cloudy, so that didn't work. But how silly was it to think that we were going, we're going to have this great, you have no control over that. On the way home, it'll be fine. Well, it snowed at home, and we were 6.5 hours delayed, almost 8 hours delayed. So that didn't go as we, to think that we were going to, get home at 5, I had that down on my little list. Home at 5. Okay, that didn't happen. Shovel snow by 6, be done at 7. Okay, I was shoveling snow at midnight, 12:30. Next day, shoveling snow, thinking about what I'm going to do later in the day, and thankfully didn't get hurt, but really took a very serious fall. So in my mind, okay, I'll be done by 10 o'clock, 10:30, shoveling, I'll rest, we'll do this and that later. That all could have changed. It's so crazy when you think about the randomness of our day. When we say, I'll see you there, I'll make a plan, that is so arrogant. We have no control. We really don't, as much as we think we do. And as I said many times, I make all these lists and I have all these things and this and this and this. And yes, you follow them and 95% of the time, thankfully, they go as planned. But there are days, and I had at least 24 hours right there, where very few things that I expected to happen happened. Maybe even more than that. Maybe the whole trip, really. There's a few little things throughout the trip where it just did not go. It was fine. It was a fun and enjoyable trip. But things did not really go as planned, weather-wise and timing-wise and other things. And certainly coming home and shoveling. And so it is crazy when we try to think like, I've got my list here. This is all going to happen as planned. I could have been sitting here today, who knows, with a broken leg, a broken arm, a sprain, this. You never, never know. But I'll tell you, it does, at least for me, and I guess the moral of the story is, yes, make your plans. Make no small plans, as Daniel Burnham said, but always be ready for the unexpected. And always be diligent for the unexpected, so that if there is a monkey wrench that's thrown into your plans, you're at least a little ready for it. So it's not as bad. As I said, when I flipped here, when I went up and I fell, I had the bearings of my mind to say, okay, I'm falling here. Let me try to lessen the fall. And thankfully, I didn't fall, on the ground. I fell in the snow. That was the other thing. When I moved my body, I fell into a snow drift, so it was padded. I didn't fall on the concrete on what I had just shoveled, which I easily could have. And I didn't fall backwards and hit my head possibly, where how do you prevent that? So once again, it is so crazy, and we sit here and we say, this all started with a nice little 2 or 3 day trip to Napa to get away from the winter. And at the end of the day, the winter won. Mother Nature always, always reminds us who's really in charge. Mother Nature was in charge with the cloud and the fog and the drizzle in Napa. It was in charge with the snow that fell here on Friday night, which helped delay us getting into Chicago for more than 8 hours. It caused us to be up until 12:30 or 1 o'clock in the morning shoveling. It caused me to be shoveling at the next day at 8 o'clock and almost seriously injuring myself. And as I sit here today, recording this podcast, it also won again. I had gone up to this point, this whole winter, without a cold. But, as I said, I always catch a cold when I shovel. And so here I am, clogged as can be. Mother Nature wins again. And welcome back to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. And now we take a overdue stroll to the Pop Culture Club to say hi to Emily Arminetti. We haven't spoken to you in a while, Emily.
Hey, Jim. I know. It feels like my triumphant return.
Yeah, between the holidays and travel, and then you were a little under the weather. So this is the first time. And so happy New Year.
Yes, happy New Year to you. 2019.
Yeah, even though this podcast will appear on the 27th of January, yeah. At least right. Initially. Yes. It's almost February. We're saying happy New
Year. That's okay, because you know this is that time of year where I'm still writing, you know, 2018 on forms or.
Oh, really?
I don't write many checks these days, but oh gosh, it takes me at least until mid February to get over that.
Oh my gosh. Well, I still write.
I'm not alone.
I write checks. I still write checks, of course.
Yeah.
And I actually wrote them on January 1st. So that was like, I found that the 19 is very easy. I'm into the 2019. It's not okay. Hard. It's very. It flows well. Mm-hmm. The 9 is easy. You know, an 8 can get messy. A 7.
I think 2017.
Oh, it was the worst.
Hard. Yeah.
2017 was horrible. It can look like an S. It can look like a 5. I mean,
I do the European. Seven.
Yeah.
You draw the line through.
Yeah,
the
I do the I European do 7. Yeah, because that drove me crazy. The 9 flowed very well, and oh my gosh, next year will be 2020. Will be fun.
Oh, that'll be easy.
Yeah, so
that'll be a smooth transition.
Well, it was fortuitous that we touched base again for the first time this year, because lo and behold, recently, just last week, a major pop culture event took place, which ties in perfect to what we want to talk about when we go to the Pop Culture Club. The Oscar nominations, and we, of course, were talking about the Golden Globes earlier, you know, a few months ago before they happened, and sort of giving the rundown on that. And so now we finally have the official Oscar nominations, and I have to say, we could talk about some specific categories, but I actually do have a list here. You had mentioned that you've got your list in front of you, which is good. My list is more proof positive of what I always say, how the Golden Globes are not a precursor to the Oscars, because I've got a list here of people who were nominated for Golden Globes.
Yes.
Whose names are never even close to the Oscars. And I have to say, my initial reaction to the nominees, not only in the Best Picture category, but certainly in many of the acting and directing categories, is there was maybe, 5 good movies last year based on this?
Well, yeah.
I mean, there's like several nominees, especially the acting. It's almost like the same 5 or 6 movies pretty much dominate almost every category.
Right. Well, I mean, I think there are also a couple of surprises here in the sense that, you know, certainly Roma, I think, you know, it's a foreign language film. It did well at the Golden Globes. I think there's been a lot of hype there. The Favorite also has been getting really great reviews, but never did I imagine that those would be the films to get the most nominations. So they tied for the most nominations with 10 each. And I definitely did not expect that. So I think those two are you know, although I think that it's not as if they're coming out of nowhere, I just didn't expect quite that many. So these two are kind of emerging as maybe almost the front runners.
Well, I tell you, what I always thought was funny, too, is that there's been so much talk about, you know, the Oscars here and what's going to win and are they going to expand? If you remember, earlier in 2018, they initially floated this idea of creating a new category mm-hmm. for most popular film as opposed to best picture. And there was a lot of blowback on that because they were trying to maybe, you know, expand the viewing public because so many of the films, and this year is no different, so many of the films that get nominated for the Academy Awards are smaller art films as opposed to the mm-hmm. big box office tent movies, franchise sequel movies. And but that criteria and that idea really wasn't fully baked, and they may revisit it. But when I look at this once again, I see a lot of smaller films like Vice and, as you said, Roma and The Favorite. You know, Black Klansman, you know, came and went. And the mm-hmm. real, for to me, the real mo, the real momentum here seems to be with on the film Green Book.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, that did very well at the Golden Globes and all the actors. Now, the director did not get nominated. Is it Farrelly or Farrelly? I'm not sure how he says his name.
Peter Farrelly, which yeah. is, you know, remember he used to work with his brother. Or maybe
yeah, the Farrelly
does.
Brothers.
You know, they did like There's Something About Mary, and they did yeah. a lot of comedies. I mean, this, I think technically this has a song. I don't know that it's a comedy per se, but I think it does have still some a bit of comedic element to it. I see it's coming across to me as kind of an uplifting movie, but I don't know. I was reading something that was suggesting that it could be that the same people who are, you know, voting Green Book in, not saying it's not a good movie, I'm sure it is, and it did well at the Globes, but could be the same Academy members who, you know, cast your mind back 20 or 25 years, who were kind of, because there's a lot of comparisons between this and kind of the driving Miss Daisy.
Right, yeah.
Only dynamic.
The other way around. Yeah, it's a little, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so I don't know. But I certainly that's, you know, been doing well in general during the awards season.
The one thing that I am shocked at about this movie, The Green Book, is I can't believe. Did you ever hear of this? Do you know what the movie's about?
Yeah, I vaguely know. I mean, I think it's based on a true story, right?
Yeah, but there, apparently this Green Book, do you know what the Green Book is?
No, you have to explain.
This is amazing.
Me.
So apparently the Green Book, there was a Green Book, right? And it was mm-hmm. put out, it was published by, I believe, a guy named Green. But it was published by an African-American journalist, or I don't even know, maybe he wasn't a journalist. But he was some African-American guy. The Green Book listed places in the United States where black people, if they were traveling, where restaurants and hotels and cities were open to having African-Americans come in.
Okay.
So it was almost like a survival book. And I saw this on on CBS Sunday Morning Show, the thing with Jane Pauley, and they were talking to people who were kids, you know, because this was in the, you know, in the 40s and 30s, and African Americans, and they said, "Oh, if you were African American and you were traveling in the United States, especially in the South, you did not leave the house without your Green Book."
Right.
And this told you restaurants that were not segregated, or hotels that were not segregated, or towns that, you know, don't stop in this town.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, so I'm sitting there going, you've never heard of it. I never heard of it. And I'm saying, with all of the attention and hopefully the insight and the knowledge that we have been trying to, pass forward here about the, America's, you know, segregation and how wrong it was and everything. I can't believe this is the first time I'm hearing about this Green
Book. Right, right.
I mean, to me, that is a this. I mean, everybody that was on this this TV thing, this report was like, you did not leave the house, and it was published every year. And there was a list of restaurants, and they even showed some older restaurants that are still open today. They're not owned by the same people, obviously. But, you know, so some of these little greasy spoons and some of these roadside diners are still there. And you're hearing these horror stories about, you know, African-American families that would be driving through, especially, like I said, the South, and they would be afraid, you know, there were some hotels that wouldn't take them. But at the same time, they were afraid to pull over on the side of the road because that wasn't safe either.
Right.
So this thing was like, they were like, you did not leave home without your green book. So I think there's that aspect to this movie of, you know, to your point about the, you know, the Driving Miss Daisy. But, you know, once again, so many of the films that they're, you know, the best picture movies over the last couple of years, 12 Years a Slave and Moonlight, you know, this kind of plays sort of into that same kind of recognition of, you know, the African American experience in the United States. So that may be one reason why it's suddenly gaining some momentum.
Yeah, but the thing that I was reading about Driving Miss Daisy and the Green Book comparison was a little bit, it was slightly different angle than that, which it was kind of more just still feeling a sense that there's this like of just something condescending and a little bit of a sense, even if they are trying to tell, you know, a story, there's still this, like, I don't know, a feeling of, like, you know, oh, here I am helping you out, even though
you're African American.
Oh, I see. And that's what so what I was reading about the Green Book nominations was more, it was more like that. It was more if you really watch Green Book, there is still that feeling of condescension. Yeah. Although I have not seen the movie, so I cannot speak to that, but it is one of the subtle criticisms that I've read, not subtle, but criticisms that I've read about the film. But in any case, I think you're right, though. How could we not know about this? Well, this is the problem with the way history is taught in this country. So, yeah, a lot of stuff that we
But I'm just surprised. I'm just surprised that given the, the last 40 years, when we have at least, you know, we look, this country is still battling segregation and still battling prejudice. We are far from that. But I mean, these historical little landmark things, I would have thought when we were telling the story of how bad segregation was, and I've always heard the stories as well about how in the entertainment industry, how the great irony was that so many of the greatest black performers, like Nat King Cole or Sammy Davis Jr. or Duke Ellington or Ella Fitzgerald or Billie Holiday or Louis Armstrong, you know, all these iconic black figures, you know, in the 40s and 50s and 60s, while they were headlining many of the major theaters in a town or even in Las Vegas, some of the major, lounges and casinos, they could not stay in the hotels downtown.
Right.
They had to stay in other parts of the town or not even in town. And yet they were, you know, they were performing and they were, you know, playing and they were given that kind of respect. But then when it came to just basic, ordinary respect of where can I sleep, where can I eat, where can I get a drink of water, they were treated just terribly. So we know about that, and yet this Green Book, to me, I would have thought that we would have heard about this this actual book somewhere, but so we'll see how that does. I just get a sense that the fact that the film and many of the actors, the lead actors, are both nominated, just it certainly gives a sense of some momentum, because it's like you said, the movie sort of came out of nowhere. I hadn't even heard of it really before the Golden Globes, and suddenly
I'd read a little bit about it,
but not like Star Is Born or anything like that.
Well, no, which yes, right, for sure was getting the vast majority of the hype. and during the fall.
I mean, so Bradley Cooper has to be surprised that he got shut out for. I mean, even though he got a, you know, best actor and a best adapted screenplay, and the song is nominated.
Well, and I think if the film were to win, I'm certain he's probably one of the producers.
Yeah, but he didn't get. I mean, this was his directorial debut.
It was, but I still think it's a win for him because this is his debut as a director. It got several nominations. I mean, certainly Lady Gaga, who is the star of it, she has been the darling of the awards season. It's a very celebrated film, and he should be proud about that. A lot of people have been writing about how he's been snubbed, and he's landed on that list in every Oscar, you know, recap or roundup of since the nominations were announced. But I have to tell you, I saw the film. I wouldn't necessarily say he's a shoo-in for it. I mean, to me, and I wouldn't even say
a shoo-in for
Best Director.
Well, he's not nominated.
That's what I'm saying is that I don't consider it a snub. And the reason why is that when you watch the film, to me anyway, the first half was spectacular. The way they set up the story, the chemistry between the two of them, both of their performances, great, outstanding. Halfway through the movie, though, things start to fall apart a bit. You know, the ending of it seems very rushed. You know,
felt like in a two and a half hour movie, the ending is rushed.
Yeah. Well, this is what I'm saying. It felt like something came apart in the second half of the film, and so for that, I gotta think you have to look at the director.
Yeah.
You know.
So you don't think that's going to win the best picture?
I'll tell you this: I don't consider him. No, I don't actually now, especially after the Golden Globes. But when I'm looking at these lists, and I keep seeing him coming up as someone who was snubbed, just as someone who, you know, just an audience member who saw the movie, I don't know if I agree with that. I'm not sure he necessarily was just like a shoe-in for a nomination for Best Director.
Yeah.
That's how I'm looking at that.
Well, like I said,
I mean, you know, Lady Gaga, I think it'll be an interesting, you know, we're not surprised that she was nominated. That was definitely expected. I think she, and it seems like it's shaping up to be a race between her and Glenn Close, with Glenn Close maybe having a slight edge because she's kind of was the underdog, and now all of a sudden she's picking up momentum.
Yeah, and she's see that movie. I saw The Wife.
I just read this too.
And she was very good at that.
Oh, I want to see it. I need to see it. But so she, I just read this. Now with this nomination, apparently she is the only living actor, or she is the living actor with the most nominations who's never won an Oscar.
Oh, really?
So maybe, you think to yourself that maybe that puts some people over the edge when they're voting. They're like, oh, come on, let's give it to Glenn Close. She's been nominated so many times. So I don't know. But equally, she could also she could also, just based on this film alone, be completely deserving of the award.
And I think the fact that, to your point about the Star Is Born, it certainly, coming out of the box, and even, you know, months before when the talk about it, there was a lot of hype. And for the most part, it got very good reviews overall, and it certainly mm-hmm. did get nominations. But I think it's lost a lot of its momentum, and, you know, the Oscars, to your point, they love to, finally honor, especially those people that have been snubbed over the years, and many of them have been. I mean, you know, it took Paul Newman, years, and Al Pacino, years. You know, Al Pacino won his Academy Award for A Scent of a Woman, that's fine. But he didn't win it for The Godfather. and Paul Newman won, I believe, for A Color of Money. I think he won for that. Did he?
I think you're right.
Yeah, and yet he didn't win for The Hustler. You know, he didn't win for The Sting. There were so many. So I think in Glenn Close's, I did not know that she has been nominated the most. So I would have bet that Lady Gaga would be the winner there, but now that you add that little uh, that little factoid in, and if I was Glenn Close's PR person, I would certainly make sure that everybody knows that in the next 3 weeks.
Right. Yes.
Because that could certainly turn the tide. She did play a very good role, and that movie called The Wife is really a good film. I mean, it's a small film, but it's a very powerful story, especially in today's female empowerment world. There's no question that it plays right into the whole idea of women not getting their due. And so that certainly the film itself, you know, has a very powerful message, and she really is good. I'll be honest with you, I'm surprised that her co-star Jonathan Pryce was not nominated. He was really good in that as well, but it's a small film, and and so just the fact that she got nominated, and pretty much that's the only nomination the film got. Wow, now that I find out that she's been the most nominated without winning.
Oh, is this going to change all of your predictions?
Well, I don't know. But yeah, well, I have to say.
This changes everything.
Well, I mean, what's funny now is we will see now. I mean, you know, that's why even to talk about now, I think to make predictions isn't really even a good idea, because you really, in the next couple of, the funny thing and the sad part of the Oscars, and I've been doing this for years, And I still do this. I still put my Oscar winners in an envelope individually, and then I give the envelopes to my wife.
Right.
And then when they announce it, she opens it up at the same time. And so
I'm surprised you don't have people from PricewaterhouseCoopers over it.
Why? They would screw it up.
Yeah, Jamie does a better job.
Yeah, the year that Moonlight won, I for about 10 seconds I was right.
Yeah.
We
should campaign to get Jamie to be the one backstage the case.
Right, because she wouldn't be taking selfies. Believe me.
No. And does she even have a smartphone? I guess she
does. Yeah, no, she has the smartphone. Yeah.
But she would leave it at home. Right. And then she would hand out the envelopes. Yeah. And everything would go to plan.
But the fact is that, you know, sadly, the Oscars really do become more of a horse race and a momentum thing. And really, without seeing the films, you can still predict the winners.
Okay, well, so now to that point, here's the other thing that surprised me. So much Oscar love for Bohemian Rhapsody.
Again,
I haven't seen this movie yet. I would like to see it, but it is not getting great reviews. And in fact, the only reason that I haven't gone to see it yet is because of that. I think this got like a rating of like 62% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is, you know, where they aggregate
I never saw a review over 2.5 stars when it first came out in newspapers or magazines.
Yes. And so I wasn't necessarily, I mean, I guess I was a little bit surprised when Rami Malek won Best Actor for the Golden Globes, but only because, like, there was some pretty stiff competition in his category. I don't even think they were in the musical category, were they? I want to say they were in the drama category, which to me, and I could be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure at the time I was thinking, huh, that's interesting that they went that route. But you know, I think anytime you're playing someone who is like a real life person, and especially someone who is that iconic, you know, that's got to be really difficult. And by all accounts, he did a good job of really becoming Freddie Mercury.
I am shocked, but I'm not, because to as much as I always say about the Golden Globes not having or not being a precursor, in this case, the fact that the film won Best Picture and he won, I think, really either woke people up. Or, I mean, given the fact now that there's, you know, up to 10 movies that can be nominated, I think that this was kind of a capitulation, as I said before, that there was going to be this, category about popular movies that made millions at the box office, because at the end of the day, while it wasn't a critical success, Bohemian Rhapsody has made about $500 or $600 million around the world. It is a huge moneymaker. And so
yes, but
you know, it certainly falls into that. It would have fallen into that new category.
Well, but the, but I still, I think that category already exists, and it's the best picture category. And it's when they opened it up to as many films as got a certain number of nominations. They did that. So that more
right.
popular box office.
But they were complaining that that's even though that happened, that wasn't, they still weren't covering.
Well,
because look at, well, look at this. I mean, look at this. Okay, Black Panther certainly is a big blockbuster. Black
yeah.
Klansman was not a blockbuster. The Favorite was not a blockbuster. The Green Book is not a blockbuster. Roma is not a blockbuster. Vice is not a blockbuster. Star is Born made a lot of money. So you got Star is
yeah.
Born, Bohemian Rhapsody, and Black
and
Panther.
Bohemian Rhapsody made, well, I think like $800 million.
Yeah,
that's
some crazy number.
Me.
But my point is, so
but
out of the eight, only three were big blockbusters. They were still, the majority were smaller films. So.
Right.
You know, like I said, I think it's going to be interesting if they revisit that. But, oh, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody certainly benefited from the high profile at the Golden Globes. But like I said, I made this list of movies that, and actors or people, just everybody says, oh, the Golden Globes are the precursor. You got to watch it. Well, okay. I just said, okay, maybe Bohemian Rhapsody did, you know, gained by that, but here's my list of people or movies that we do not see on the Oscar
okay.
that were hugely represented at the Golden Globes. I don't see a Mary Poppins anywhere.
I know. Right?
I don't see Emily Blunt. I don't see Hamilton. And I don't see the film at all. Nowhere.
Hamilton. Do you mean Lin-Manuel?
Hamilton.
What's his name?
Hamilton.
Yeah, okay. That's his new name, Hamilton.
That's his
okay.
name, Hamilton.
Right.
If Beale Street Could Talk, not there.
Yeah, that was... Well, okay, so Regina King's nominated, and I was not
yeah.
at all surprised by that. In fact, I think she may be my pick this year to win for Best Supporting Actress for Beale Street. But, yeah, it was surprising not to see
right.
the film nominated, and it was surprising not to see Barry Jenkins nominated
right.
for Best Director.
Nicole Kidman was nominated for a film called Destroyer, not on this list. Rosamund Pike was nominated for The Private War, not on the list. Lucas Hedges for Boy Erased, not on the list. John C. Reilly from Stan and Ollie, not on the list. Robert Redford, not on the list. Charlize Theron, not on the list. As I said, Emily Blunt, not on the list. So there was, and those
well,
were.
You know, but you know that part of that is because some of the people you mentioned, I believe, were bumped because of the emergence of The Favorite and Roma as kind of the two most celebrated going into the Oscars, because both of the actresses from Roma
right.
were not, neither of them were nominated for Golden Globes. They were both nominated,
yeah.
one in the Best Actress category and one in Best Supporting Actress. And then in The Favorite, I believe Olivia Colman was nominated. I don't remember if both Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone were both nominated in Best Actress in the Supporting Role, but they both were here.
Yeah.
You know, and then again, you know, I think Bohemian Rhapsody getting a couple of nominations that, okay, Golden Globes, fine, you can see they're a little bit looser and it's the Hollywood foreign press. And so sometimes they have a different way of approaching it. But certainly for the Oscars, I'm surprised they got as many as they did. So of course, there's
yeah.
an opportunity cost
well,
to some of those more surprise nominations.
I think that there
Sam Elliott for A Star is Born. Now that one.
Yeah, that one was.
Yeah,
that was.
I mean, he's never been nominated for an Oscar. This is yeah. his first one. I love him. He's a great
yeah.
actor. Although he kind of tends to play the same guy
yeah,
a lot.
He's always it.
You know what I mean? But you know, I'm not sure that was necessarily expected. And so, you know, I mean, there are
yeah.
other people who then kind of got bumped.
Well,
but also,
go ahead.
Well, you know, the Golden Globes. I mean, they do have the benefit of having these two separate categories. You've got drama on one hand, and then you've got musical and comedy on the other hand, which sort of opens it up to more slots to be filled. So the Oscars always naturally narrows.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting, what I think is interesting is that there was a lot of talk about Black Panther, and while it made a lot of money and a lot of people thought it was one of the best, you know, superhero movies and CGI movies, I think I got nominated more out of obligation. The buzz on that has completely died. No one else from that film was nominated for anything. None of the actors, none of the directors, nothing. So I think the movie itself, there was so much hype about it, and that was why that other category was even being talked about being created, because of Black Panther and the success of it. So I don't think that has a chance. And I think that if the way you're talking exactly about the momentum, and as we've been talking about here, and we'll see how everything plays out in the next couple, 3 weeks. But if the worst thing for the Oscars, who are trying to expand their scope and be more, appealing to the wider audience, I think that the Academy voters, while the Academy committee is trying to do that, I think when you look at these nominees, it's a small group of films. It's a group of small films. I think the voting members are kind of saying to the committee, we do not want the Oscars to be the Golden Globes. We do not want them to be the People's Choice. And as much as the committee wants to expand its viewership, and ABC wants higher ratings and it wants to expand the viewership, I have a feeling, as a silent revolt against the commercialization of the Oscars, I've got a feeling that Roma, which has subtitles and is a very small foreign film that's about domestic idea, it's not some big, it's not even a big universal story. It's a very small, it's very intense story, but it's a small film, but it's got subtitles. I think as a, and I'm just going on a limb, I don't know yet, this is early, as I said, you'll see as the momentum goes, but it has won a lot of pre-Oscar awards now, and I think that Roma may sweep this in terms of director and film, at the very least, as a as a subtle reminder, as a and a subtle revolt to tell ABC and to tell the Academy Award Committee, we're here to talk about excellence. We're not here to talk about popularity. And so, you know, and Glenn Close is in that same situation.
Well, and just going back to Roma, though, what a huge thing that will be, too, for streaming, because
you could see it now.
Netflix's first Oscar nomination.
Right.
So,
yeah, no, there's I really think that when you see Green Book, which is a smaller film, and Roma are emerging now as the two favorites. I don't think Bohemian Rhapsody wins the best Oscar, and I don't think A Star Is Born does. I think it's almost a two horse race now between Roma and Green Book, and I have to think that if there is some backlash about the, as I said in this last year, about the Academy Awards trying to be, you know, more open and serving the more popular films,
more mainstream.
Yeah, I think that that the Roma thing could be that little kind of message. And here we are, a month or so, what is the actual Oscars on the 20?
I think it's February 23rd.
Yeah, or something like that. We still don't know if there's a host.
There is no host. No, I was going to say you're getting. Oh no, I'm sorry. I was wrong about the date. It's Sunday, February 24th.
Yeah, and we still don't know if there's a host.
I think I read yesterday that there will be no host.
Yeah,
so you're finally getting your wish. Your wish is granted.
And who said that a month ago when the Kevin Hart thing? I'm like, you don't need a host.
Okay, yes, and I saw Jimmy Kimmel on, so you know who, do you know who Andy Cohen is? He hosts Watch
No,
What
I don't.
Live on Bravo.
No, I don't know who Andy Cohen. You know, that is almost an insult.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. You watch
Below
Deck. Oh my God, I forgot you're a secret.
Okay,
Below
who created? Can I ask you a question first of all? Who created the segment that you are on right now?
I know. Okay. So
do I know who Andy Cohen is?
I know. All right. I know. I forget sometimes. Well, anyway, so Andy Cohen is out in LA right now awaiting the birth of his first child.
Right,
and he's doing his show from there for the next, well, for the foreseeable future until the baby's born and he goes back to New York. Yeah. But he had Jimmy Kimmel on the other night because Jimmy Kimmel came straight from his show. And he asked him about that. He asked him about the whole Kevin Hart thing, and you know, and then he said, well, I don't think, well, he asked him, do you feel bad that you weren't asked to return? Cause he confirmed he was not asked to return.
Right,
and they
right.
said they were going to go with something else. But he said, you know, I don't think that the show should have a host anyway, because they're saying that they are whittling this down to 3 hours. And he said, I went 3 hours and 40 minutes and I was really like working hard to keep everything moving quickly. So he said a 3 hour show, they don't even have time to have a host.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think you're going to see some interesting, you know, changes. But I do believe that I'm at this early point, I'm playing, like I said, it has nothing to do with even quality or what movies I think. You have to sort of play these mind games with the Oscars. And many times if you do that, you can't predict them without even seeing them. I have not seen Roma, but I'm just getting a sense, the fact that it was nominated for so many, that it could be a winner just for the statement that it would make, more than even, because obviously a huge amount of people haven't seen it. So we will see. What happens here on, what'd you say, February 24th?
Yes, right. Sunday, February 24th. I will be there with my ball gown and my bottle of champagne.
There you go. Thank you so much, Emily Armonetti. And that ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. Thank you for spending one of the 168 hours a week that you are allotted in your life. Thank you for giving me one of those. You still have 167 to go. I'm Jim Tarano, and here on Business, I'm only here for fun. This is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.